good evening. I recognize almost everyone. Is anyone here for the first time? I rarely come in the evenings. Usually I'm getting ready for bed at this time. I'm usually here in the morning, so that's probably why you haven't seen me. Some of you haven't seen me. My name is Ellen, and I've been practicing here on and off for over 40 years. And for the last 2 years, I've been practicing here on a regular basis. So I've been sitting a long time. I don't give talks very often. I think I can count on one hand the number of talks I've given. So never quite know what to say. I managed to put something together. But I always feel like on the one hand there's not much to say, and on the other hand there's so many things to talk about. There just seem to be a lot of different topics in connection with our practice. Yet because so much can't be spoken about, it's challenging to always find the right words that encourage people. And so this is a talk to, I hope, encourage you and encourage myself in this practice. On Tuesday mornings, we have a study group, and right now we're studying the Diamond Sutra. And during our last meeting, the word happiness came up in the sutra, and some of the people there questioned that word happiness and said, that's not really the word that I would use. And so we talked about different alternatives to happiness. Although in the week that followed, the word happiness kept coming into my I kept confronting it in different ways. And so first I'd like to read the sentence that has the word happiness in it. If a bodhisattva does not rely on any concept when practicing generosity, then the happiness that results from the virtuous act is as great as space. It cannot be measured. So the word generosity and concept and happiness are the main words, as well as a bodhisattva. And Thich Nhat Hanh's comment on this talked about how when you're, for example, washing the dishes and some other people are having a great time, but you are stuck washing the dishes. And if you have that feeling, that then you cannot enjoy washing the dishes. But if you wash the dishes without that thought and just wash the dishes, then you can have a good feeling. And of course, this can apply to, you know, to everything that we do. And the word concept means that you don't, whatever we do in our lives, we do it just to do it. Recently got an email from the graduate school that I went to, and it was a questionnaire about money, basically. And one of the questions was, do you give money because you want to be thought well of? And so that's a very good example of doing something and having something else attached to it. And if we go through our day, we can see that there are so many times when instead of just doing something to do it, there's something else going on in our head. And I know one thing that I have, that I've been doing lately is when I eat, I think, is this good for me? And, you know, sometimes I get really tired of that. I want to just eat because it tastes good. And so it's just another example. So generosity. I feel that's one of the six paramitas, which are the six perfections. And generosity, or dana, it's the Sanskrit word, is the first one. And the second one is practicing the precepts, which is like a code of conduct, ethical way of carrying ourselves forth in the world. And the next one is patience or endurance, and then energy, and concentration is next, which is meditation, zazen. And the last one, which of course includes everything, is prajna, or understanding. And these six paramitas are what helps us to reach the shore of enlightenment. And enlightenment is that word that we hear a lot of, and really sometimes often we, you know, we don't quite know what it is. And I've been reading the autobiography of Alan Watts, and I enjoy his talks. And the last talk that was on the radio was an interview that he gave at the time that his autobiography came out. So I quickly went to my computer and saw that the library had it, and I reserved it. And so now I'm almost finished reading it. But he talks about a book that he wrote called The Meaning of Happiness. And he said that he didn't think happiness was the right word for what he meant, for what he was trying to convey in the book. And he said he would rather perhaps enlightenment, mystical experience, or cosmic consciousness would be, you know, more appropriate. Personally, when I hear those kinds of words, I go, what? You know, it sounds good, but, you know, I'm not quite sure. I didn't grow up with that kind of vocabulary, but I certainly grew up with the word happiness. But then he goes on to say that though those enlightenment, mystical experience, and cosmic consciousness resemble happiness in the sense that It cannot be attained at will like mere pleasure. And I've heard that said before, and I find that interesting how happiness is something we can't make ourselves feel, but perhaps we can create the right conditions to be in that state. Whereas pleasure is probably a little bit easier. You know, I can take a hot shower and it feels great, and it's very pleasurable. And the next thing that came my way was an email from Steve Bodian. Does anyone here know who Steve Bodian is? He was ordained by Kobun Chino, who was the first teacher here. And I think he was one of the first monks that Kobun ordained. And he went on to study with other teachers, and he has his own school. Not really, it's sort of a kind of a floating school in a way. But he teaches at various places in the United States. And he sent out an email that included where he would be teaching next. And at the top of the page, in big letters, it said, "Happiness is your natural state." And he went on to say, "It is coming home to the wondrous intimacy and joy of this moment, just as it is." And so I was really glad to see that. You know, it kind of, I really like that. And I think that probably all of us have come home and are just in the moment, and it feels happy. It's, when I was a child, my mother used to tell me often, "Ellen, smile." And I don't think I was a grumpy kid, but I guess there were times when I really was very unhappy, and she would tell me to smile. And I find that I've never forgotten that. And I find myself, when I'm in a mood where I'm feeling really down or discouraged, which, you know, happens every day, I try to remember to just smile, even, you know, when I'm by myself. And it changes something. It's really interesting how that act of smiling, it's kind of magical. I know when I go for walks in the morning, I never know what's going to happen on my walk. And, you know, it's, there are always surprises, and sometimes I'll pass people by and I'll say good morning and smile. And sometimes I remember seeing someone who looked really scary, and so I was going to smile at this guy, and I smiled, and he smiled back, and he wasn't scary looking anymore. And I just found that really interesting. Oh, and I want to share a couple of things that happened on my walks. I think it was on Sunday. I live in Capitola, and I walked down to the overlook, the bluff that overlooks the ocean. And on Sunday, I walked actually right along the ocean, along the cliffs. And I stopped to look out and watch the waves crash and listen to them. I love the sound of the ocean waves crashing. And in front of me there was pampas grass, and it's pretty old now because I think it's starts blooming again in September. And so that there are dried stalks. And all of a sudden this bird alighted on one of these stalks. And it looked like a very interesting bird. It had really nice coloring, brown and white, different shades of brown and white. And it, you know, it looked like an Audubon moment. It was very lovely. Something you would see, you know, in an Audubon magazine. And then it started to sing. And it had a very distinct song that I'd never heard before. And it did it about four or five times and then flew off. But it did it enough so that I could remember it. And so I went home and went on my computer and I found out what it was. And it was a Vesper sparrow. And Vesper, Vespers are evening service in the church. And there's a bell that's called a Vesper. And so I guess that's how it got its name, because usually it sings in the evening, although it will sing in the morning. And I was really delighted. And then 2 days later, I took the same walk, and I couldn't remember exactly where I stopped, and I waited, and I didn't see it. And I said, well, I couldn't expect to see it again. But then I ended up at the same place as before, and in 2 seconds it was there again, and it made me happy. It was very, very wonderful. And the other thing that happened on my walk, there was a boy standing in front of his house. He's about 12, 13 years old. And he was touching a rose. And I'm not used to seeing boys of that age caressing a rose. Very unusual. It was on a bush in front of his house. And so I stopped and I said, you like roses, I say. And he said, oh, yes, and he started talking about the rose and then one that was just a bud, and he had a camera. He was taking pictures of them. And so I started talking to him about the avocado tree that was there, and he seemed to be very knowledgeable about it being a female tree and that it needed a male in order to produce, but there was a male across the street. And he had just moved into the neighborhood. He told me he and his family just moved there. And it was just so lovely to have that kind of encounter. And the next day, when I walked by, his mother was outside. And I felt oh, this is great. Now I can tell her what a lovely son she has. And she was quite happy and asked me where I lived and said it's nice to have such nice neighbors. Maybe we'll go for a walk together sometime. So those are just a couple of things that have happened on my walk lately. And my next encounter with happiness was on the computer, I look at the New York Times, and they have this one section with the very recent news that you can scroll down, make sure I'm not missing anything that's going on in the world. And I see the Dalai Lama, and Patti Smith was singing Happy Birthday to him at the Glastonbury Festival. Did anyone see this? And so I played it. I didn't hear the happy birthday part, and I'm not sure why I couldn't hear that, but it was afterwards, and the Dalai Lama talked a lot about happiness and how when we wake up, it said every day is our birthday, and it should make us feel happy, and we carry that, should carry that happiness throughout the day. And he talked about friendship and trust and his own daily practice of using body, speech, and mind to serve others. And it was just delightful. If you haven't seen it, I encourage you to look it up on the internet. And, he's going to be 80 on, I think, Monday or Tuesday? Monday, the 6th, July 6th. I kind of wish he would be installed as the spiritual leader of this country and knock some sense into some of the people there. Although it's been a great, great week, at least from my perspective. A lot of good legislation and passed, and not legislation, the Supreme Court rulings have been very favorable to my way of thinking. Well, I think I've said everything I'd like to say, and if anyone has anything they would like to share, you're welcome to do so. Patrick?
What was the line that you read from the Tao Te Ching, the concept?
Oh, yeah. If a bodhisattva does not rely on any concept when practicing generosity, then the happiness that results from the virtuous act is as great as space. It cannot be measured. Right, right. You're being generous so that people will think well of you. Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, there are so many ways to give. You know, not just, of course, money, but your peace of mind and joy or happiness, whatever, is a way of giving it, of being generous. Richard? Welcome.
Thank you. Smiles, great subject. Probably one of the best gifts you can give. It makes me think, I'm one of my quotes of the day. I don't know if you get that, you know, the peace quotes of the day. It's not hard to, can't paraphrase it. And he says, happiness can bring a smile. But a smile can bring happiness. And the interesting thing about that is then on TED Talks, you know, probably a year ago, and my partner and I would take notes, and we would be fascinated by it, that scientifically, you know, they figured out that just that gesture releases endorphins in you, and then the person that directed towards you, if they're not smiling, if they see, you might not feel happy, but it's the raising of the size of the mouth actually causes happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And this physical thing. But what really interests me is that it also, even if the other person wasn't smiling or didn't put it in a good mood, that scene of the upraised lips of the person that they're looking at, you know, looking, whether they're feeling anything, you know, makes them also start to, and like you say, that smiling and then causing that fellow to smile back.
Yeah.
And so that whole thing is, I think, smiling.
What is your name?
Lenore.
Lenore.
I've been practicing here off and on since that 1990s, but mostly off.
Mm.
But the word that comes to me is joy.
Mm.
And that joy that I'm speaking of is the joy that comes when you let go.
Mm.
And you know, it's an experience that the new one I'm talking about, and I can't totally explain it. But it is, when my experience is when I push everything I can push, and I can no longer, it's obvious. This is, I have no power over it. Like, I give up trying to fix things. I give up my expectations of how it should come out. There's a definite giving up in this total letting go. You're taking walks and not knowing what's going to happen. I've gone to retreats and things like that, not knowing what's going to happen. But implicit in that is expecting something will.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm totally open to what that is, but in that sense of letting go of outcomes and letting go of control comes a joy, and I think it's the joy in this present moment just as it is.
Mm-hmm.
But my experience has been things are not at all like I want. You know, the happiness, I can't get it. The happiness, you know, I'm trying to get it and make it. And then it's still, nothing has changed when I give up. But I am filled with a joy and just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
I don't know where that comes from, but that's a powerful thing. And that's what I would call with happiness that they're talking about.
Mm.
The joy that I experience in my heart.
Thank you.
I appreciate what Lauren just said. That's what I'm trying to say. It's the chasing happiness, I think, is a trap. It seems difficult to me. You know, if you just accept that your circumstances, you can survive and you can find the joy through the human suffering, you can fight it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of a point to that. It's difficult. But happiness, you know, I hear it so often tied to people's conferences, so it trips me up. It's just a personal thing. But I like the idea of surrendering and giving up. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a kind of a feeling that is kind of subtle. If you don't really let go and pay attention, you'll miss it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But you're always chasing happiness. It could be like a habit. You just keep finding part of mind. Sure,
right.
So that's kind of
where I think even in, you know, when you're feeling really sad about something, I don't think happiness always has to be with a smile. I remember getting a phone call that my father had passed away. I knew that, you know, it was going to happen soon. And of course I was very sad, but I remember being right in the moment. And it's kind of like when you think about, you know, we talk about emptiness, and when there's true emptiness, there's also fullness. And the fullness of that moment, I don't know, it was very, it was real. I was really, it was a very full moment. And so I understand, you know, that sometimes the word happiness can might seem like, you know, we should be smiling. Pardon?
We don't think that happiness will fill you up.
Mm-hmm.
I've experienced that feeling of the emptiness and wanting to fill me up. So, you know, I wasn't attaching to anything, but I felt presence and I felt grounded.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So,
Yeah. I remember several years ago, I visited Death Valley, and when we were traveling there, it was raining the day before, and we stayed at a motel, I forget where, and then the next day it was still raining, and I don't know if any of you have been to Death Valley, but you have to go over two mountain passes to get there, and, you know, the trip there was hell, and so we got there, we, you know, got our stuff in the motel where we were staying, Stovepipe Wells, which is right across from the sand dunes. And the sun came out, and David and I walked out to the sand dunes, and it happened. It was like everything dropped away, and that moment was so full, I started crying. I felt like a child again. And you never know. You can't plan on it. Yeah. Thank you.
You know, listening, I find it fascinating that the conversation of happiness here is the discussion of length and go. Mm-hmm. But in life, you know, in day-to-day life, we're so conditioned to happiness is if you could just get that thing, if you could just have this. And I think many people confuse like momentary pleasure, temporary pleasure, with happiness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could just own that. I could just afford to have that, and then I'll be happy.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, that's just an illusion. You even want the next thing, the next thing, rather than letting go and doing what's inside.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's very true. Thank you. Lenore?
It strikes me when listening to both of you that happiness is something that you try to get, or you can try to get. You can't try to get joy.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even run the concept of listening and say, joy is something that's given. And emptiness, I can remember writing down someplace in a whole name, but joy is to be empty. I had never experienced, you know, it doesn't make sense, but I knew what it was at the time. But the difference, I don't think that when the words were written, the Dhyana Sutra, that, or translated, whatever, there was probably not that usage difference, and maybe it's all in my mind. But we seem to have a cord for what we can go after and try to get, grasp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're probably all talking about the same thing, and sometimes the words, you know, have different connotations for each of us. And some people would prefer to use enlightenment, maybe. Pardon?
Joy and happiness are the same thing, basically.
Mm-hmm.
What we're talking about, it's what it's not worth. But this grasping idea that freaks me out, that didn't matter.
Peter, when your son walked back here, he looked at me and waved. It was so sweet. You have lovely children.
He likes roses.
He does? Huh? Oh, okay. Yeah, if they could sit quietly in here, they'd be welcome to sit in here anytime, I think. I would love to see children in here. Okay, anything, anyone else? Okay, thank you. Our are numberless. I vow to save them.